Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
You done fidgeting, you two?
Sorry.
Slags.
It's extra time.
He shoots, and it's a goal!
Hello and welcome back to the podcast, everyone. We're all surviving right now. And when I say all, it's me, Patrick Van Straten. It's Zach Jellub.
All safe and sound. I actually feel better now than I ever have. The coronavirus is at its peak and I feel like an absolute animal. I can fight anything right now.
Well, you will survive, apparently. Children unaffected by the virus so far. And Mike Atkins also joining us.
Yeah, I'm more likely to catch it because I catch trains every single day.
Oh, yeah, same.
And yesterday was a nightmare because it was, you know, when people are like, oh, we're packed in there like sardines.
It was tighter than.
Yeah.
Really?
Well, you can see the uncomfortableness in people's. Like, I was stifling a cough for about an hour.
Oh, do it.
Man.
Just cough.
I'd purposely
just face.
Achoo! And then look at everyone freak out. Well, Sam said that apparently someone on his training today sneezed and he just heard someone go, open the windows! And everyone just ran to open the windows.
I mean, I don't think a sneeze is a big part of the virus. But anyway, we are going to get onto it because, of course, the biggest story in football right now and around the world is coronavirus and whether it will put an end to the football season. Then we're going to take a look at some of the Champions League results from last night. And if we've got time, we may do an anything but football. But, of course, we must lead with coronavirus. Obviously, we talked about it a few weeks ago.
I mean, we did.
We didn't do it that seriously. We talked about who would get it first in the office. Who did we settle on? Was it Joe?
No, we said Joe
and Hamill
have both got weak
immune systems, and Joe's got asthma, which is worrying.
Yeah.
But anyway, it is sweeping the globe right now. Cases spiking in Iran, Italy, South Korea and the US, as well, of course, as China. Though South Korea and China in the last few days have reported dwindling infection rates. Now, Italy is arguably the most affected country right now, certainly outside China.
10,000, isn't it?
Yeah, they've placed... Basically, the Italian government has placed the entire country under national quarantine, restricting movement except for work and health reasons. Just a day earlier, they had essentially closed down Lombardy and a load of the central regions, which in a move which affected 16 million people. But now they've suspended all sporting events in Italy as part of a ban on all public gatherings. So cinemas, gyms, weddings and funerals, everything basically has come to an end. And they'd said originally... They originally delayed some games, then they announced games would be played behind closed doors, and now all games have been suspended until at least the 3rd of April.
But that's not Serie A's decision, that's the decision of the government, their Olympic committee or something like that, for all sport.
And so we basically have no idea now if Serie A is going to finish this season. Outside of Italy, Arsenal's game with Man City, which is meant to be held tonight, has been postponed after Olympiacos owner Evangelos Marinakis tested positive for the virus. He met several Arsenal players after Arsenal lost to Olympiacos in the Europa League nearly 2 weeks ago. Those players who he met are quarantined until Friday. Now, if any of them test positive, then West Ham players who played against Arsenal at the weekend will need to be checked, as they played Arsenal recently too.
Yeah.
In the Champions League, almost every remaining game of the round of 16 will take place behind closed doors due to the threat of the illness. Last night, Atalanta played Valencia in a closed stadium in Spain.
Well, if they all have those kind of goals...
it'd be good, actually.
It might be too bad.
It's not too bad. And of the remaining six fixtures, only Liverpool versus Atleti and Man City versus Real Madrid are likely to have supporters in the stadium.
The two in England.
So... Yeah. What do we think is going to happen with the league? Do we think Serie A is going to finish the season? And do we think the Premier League will end up being suspended?
I feel like the UK has a very different view on it. And like until it's to the point where it's, I guess we're in Italy's boat, where we've got 10,000 people or 10,000 cases, then I think that's when we'll look at it and go, okay, we need to do something about it. I find weirdly, like, although I know it is serious and I know it's something that... It can affect everyone. Personally, I've not really given it much thought. Like,
sure.
I wash my hands. I've been doing that ever since I was a kid. Exactly. It's not like the whole thing where it's like, oh my God, this is how you wash your hands. I was like, what is everyone else doing?
I know.
But then you've seen it. Like, there's been so many times you go to a urinals and like the person next to you.
Oh, they just walk out.
And they just walk out. And I'm just like, definitely not going to touch that door.
That is staggering to me, by the way. Like when women were kind of like, I saw women on Twitter saying like, what have men been doing this whole time? And I was like, I feel like we've been telling women for years that most men just walk out of a loo without doing it, which I still can't believe that people do that, because it's not even for other people's, but it's for their own benefit. Yeah. So that's always confused me. But now you're like, I don't know. I don't find it's changing my behaviour.
But it's even to the extent of maybe we are just hygienic people. Because it was even like, I would come in from when I get on the tube and I come in, I would always just wash my hands anyway.
Because you're going to eat with your hands. Yeah, like, exactly. Yeah.
And like things like that. So for me personally, I was always like, nothing's really changed that much. And maybe just because the UK hasn't had a serious amount, like we're not in thousands of diagnoses yet anyway.
I mean, today we're 2 weeks. Just under 400.
Yeah, 373 or something like that.
I think maybe it's because of that point where I'm like, it's not like the biggest thing in the world, although technically it is the biggest thing in the world right now.
So
I think I'm kind of got the mentality that everyone else has in England, where it's kind of, until it gets worse, carry on. However, that probably shouldn't be how we think. We shouldn't wait until it gets worse to then stop it, stop games, to stop it from spreading. Like, we should probably have these precautions in place before it gets worse, to hopefully help it not get worse.
Well, or at least to spread out the effect. So like, that's the idea, right, of distancing and containment measures, which are that rather than you having a big spike where loads and loads of people get sick and the NHS is hugely overtaxed, you have a lower spike over a longer period of time, which means the NHS is fuller for longer, but it's not like absolutely like straining under the weight of people who are suddenly getting sick all over the shop. Currently, our government's doing absolutely nothing, whereas Poland and Ukraine, for example, have already closed down schools, universities, museums, despite the fact Poland has 25 confirmed cases. Ukraine has one.
Oh, wow.
And they're already taking these measures.
Yeah, I've read things like Czech Republic have banned any... some of my family are going to be going to Czech Republic at the end of this month. Czech Republic have banned any public gathering of over 100 people, which includes schools.
Yeah. Do you think... Like,
I mean, I'm going to go to the gym this afternoon. There'll probably be 60 people in there. And it's like, I'm not really thinking about that yet.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the thing. Do you think it's just because the UK, I guess, is so much bigger than those countries in terms of, I guess, it's... of population and also like maybe ranking in terms of the whatever.
What do you mean? Sorry.
Well, like in terms of like in the world's kind of rankings of countries, right? Wealth, but all of it, all of it. So like where everything kind of goes into
I think it's fair to say the UK.
The UK
generally
it's in
has
pot
a,
one.
Has
is that
high,
what you're saying?
Essentially, yeah. If you get what I mean, what I mean by that is like. The UK, the US.
There's only so many countries in G8. G8 is like the eight biggest economies of the world.
I don't want to say them.
G20 is like the 20.
Sure, but I mean, like China and Japan are up there. So, like,
true. But okay.
What's your point that like that the UK might be better equipped?
Not necessarily better equipped. But
I mean, it helps that it's an island. I'll give it that. Yeah.
But it's also a lot more densely populated than a lot of these countries. Which
also true.
Could become a problem.
Well, certainly the south is. For instance, in Italy, like what you've seen is that the north has been disproportionately affected, and the north is where the population is centered. The north is like where the economy and industry are centered as well. Same would happen in the UK, right? Which is that the south is really like where you have extremely dense population.
London,
and the southeast. Whereas the north, actually, people are much more spread out, with the exception of places like Newcastle and Manchester and Birmingham. Birmingham, not the Midlands, it's the north. seriously, there's no such thing as the Midlands, but it's a separate point. So I guess that you would... I kind of feel like it's inevitable it's going to end up on the tube.
It must be already.
It must be there already.
I will be so surprised the tube does not have it. In some regard.
Well, it depends what you mean, though.
Someone that has the coronavirus has been on the tube. If that has not happened already, I'd be super surprised.
In fairness, though, there are only like 370 cases.
370 confirmed.
Confirmed cases, true.
Yeah.
And you'd expect that's going to keep going up every day. There are going to be loads of people who are like asymptomatic or, you know, are just yet to show symptoms, whatever. Mm. But 373 is not very many people, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, even 10,000 people is not that many people. Like, London has a population of, like, over 9 million.
Yeah.
So that's, what, 1 in 900? No.
If they're all in London. Yeah?
No. 10, 100, 1,000. 1 in 9,000.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just like, I don't know. I feel like we're still a reasonable way away from it, but it looks like we should be taking measures. You know, for instance, in France, they're taking measures. You know, PSG's game against Borussia Dortmund is going to be played behind closed doors. And when you think about an event perfectly designed to spread a disease, a football match is
perfect.
It's high up there. Loads and loads of people shouting and singing the entire game. Like, they all go through the same barriers. They all go and buy food. They all go to the same loos. Yeah. Like, I don't know, man.
And even the journeys to the grounds
as well.
It's just such a, like, it's a big... Even the financial impact it would have as well, because the second you then stop allowing fans to go to the ground, the financial impact of ticket prices, because clubs can't just keep that money, they have to give it
back.
What's
going to happen with
FFP? What, because teams are going to be like...
Because teams are going to be losing, if it's behind closed doors, they're going to be losing revenue.
Yeah, it depends what they spend. You assume they maybe, like, I don't know,
the
like,
loss. Imagine if they make the loss bigger and then somehow City get away with it.
that would actually be sort of amazing.
like there's so many impacts on sport.
Yeah,
beyond the infection. Well, I mean, as we've seen with society, like things like the banks cutting interest rates and things like that, there's so much more of an impact it will have on.
Well, for example, as well, like
the other side of sport.
So you decided
to the actual sport.
So you decided nobody's going to get promoted and relegated this season, and you're just going to run the season back again. You know, like, you give Liverpool the
title. That's one of the options that they're thinking about in Italy as well at the moment.
So, but then, like, say your team has been like. They've been doing really well this season because you were getting the last year of production out of, you know, like,
say
your
Liverpool.
Aging superstar. Like, yeah, say like one of your players who's just so key to you. This is like the very last year that we can get this out of them. And then you kind of, and then say you're a team like Leeds, for example. And then you get told you have to do it all over again. Maybe that player falls off a cliff and you're kind of like.
I personally feel like that option just won't happen.
But what are the other options?
Well, I think, like, because so right now Italy are thinking of three different options.
Yes, I saw this.
One of them is that
cancel the season.
The other one is a playoff. So you do a relegation playoff of the bottom four. No, but it depends how many. Obviously,
it depends how many games
relegated.
You can fit in,
etc. But the other would be a playoff for the title between the top four,
which is also mental.
But I think personally. That, like, because the season has happened. We're two thirds through the season, and so I feel like you can't just go. Nah, we're gonna scrap this, and allow teams that are in, say, Serie B, who have been playing really well, not allow get the chance to go up, or even give the possibility of, say, a Lazio, who, you know, they may do it.
But that doesn't matter, man. Like the title is the least important thing.
Yeah,
because there are no massive economic effects that come with the title, whereas promotion or relegation. Genuinely change the future of those clubs in such a way that if they said we're going to end the Premier League season now, and if you're in the relegation zone, you're going down. And I was and I was a club like Watford or Norwich, you better believe I would call every lawyer I possibly
but
could.
That's what I would personally say. The playoff system for relegation is better. But then,
what if you're like, fifth from bottom and you get relegated?
That is the other.
I'd be furious.
That's the other issue. I think personally, that is. Probably going to be the option, but the thing as well is that even if they do that, they're still going to have to be played behind closed doors, which is the whole point. And if you're playing,
Right now they're just going to carry on playing them indefinitely in the Premier League.
Oh, sorry, in the Premier League,
it seems like they don't care at all.
I personally meant Serie A then.
Yeah, sure.
Because if you're going to do that, why don't you just play all the games behind closed doors anyway then?
Yeah, like well, that's
because it doesn't figure anything out.
That was the thing. Like, people are now saying like, oh well, football's not football without the fans. You're like, well. Then you don't end the season. Like people, okay. So I actually like made notes of some of the things. I went on the BBC Sport page. You know,
some of these are great.
They're so mental. Like
what?
The
they
ticker, you know, on like if you go to BBC Sport, you know, where it's like today in sports, and people text in or people tweet and they like put them on the page.
Yeah,
they're so stupid. I can't believe it. Okay, so Mrs. Nesbitt said. Best option at this point would surely be postpone international competitions for a year, and we will come back to Euro 2020, to allow all the major leagues to postpone games for a few weeks. Then, when the all clear is given, play out fixtures in the order planned, just shifted back a few weeks. Brilliant. Why does she think that in a few weeks this is going to be, like, totally resolved?
Yeah.
That's what I don't understand. Italy is on national lockdown. Schools and universities are closed across Europe. This idea that, like, you postpone a few weeks. I completely agree. I think it's much better to say we're going to play all games behind closed doors and just carry on with the schedule as is, rather than trying to postpone. Like, that makes no sense, because I think that's going to happen if you postpone is you will wait 6 weeks and be in exactly the same position as you are now, but with 6 weeks fewer to prepare. Mm-hmm. It makes no sense.
I still find it mental that Atalanta played last night, if I'm being honest. The fact that they've
flew
out of Bergamo in the middle of northern Italy
to
the south of Spain to play a game, and then they're going to fly back today, or probably even flew back last night. Lyon are going to have to come into Turin to play Juventus next week.
You would assume, Getafe. Though, like...
Well, also, why are they playing at stadiums? Why? There's no need to play at the stadium.
You literally go to the training ground.
I suppose it's because cameras are set up, but you could literally do it at the training ground where you can control the environment a bit more. Do it in a field. Who cares? Like, it doesn't actually matter. I don't understand. Like, right, okay, we've got to basically try and keep it as normal as possible.
Take him down to the local pavilion.
They should play music over the game as well. It's weird. I don't like hearing the players shout at each other. I find it odd.
I don't mind it. I find it quite funny.
I don't know. I find the noise of the football echoing around the stadium. It's like they've broken in.
You do realise, though, like, the difference actually that fans do make, because it's so weird where you're just hearing like the players just screaming things through, or like the manager on the touchline.
Yeah, the manager going mental.
The players can finally hear each other. Yeah. That must be so weird.
Yeah, and it must be horrible, because then everyone else can hear you too. Yeah. Where he's like, now push up, and you're like, okay. they're going to push up now, guys. I don't know. I don't know. And then I've got John Rushton. He says the season can't be scrapped. The financial implications for clubs would be devastating. Bro, the financial implications are already devastating. Like, I don't understand what he's saying. Like, the season can't be scrapped because the financial implications would be devastating. Why? They're going to carry on doing things exactly the same way. We'll still allocate the prize money from the Champions League insofar as it exists.
Yeah.
Teams are already losing loads of money. This is the last of my concerns. This is a major economic problem for countries like China. And he thinks the issue is that there are clubs in the Premier League who might not get quite as much prize money because we're stopping the Champions League early. Moronic. It was just said, as a last resort, is it possible to finish the season in August and September, roll straight into the next?
Wow, so don't give him a break.
I don't know when he thinks the other season starts as well, that he's like, finish this season in September, roll straight into the next, and have a longer mid-season break. Mad times.
Sorry, but
I don't understand.
What?
Because then the argument is, this season overruns, then he's like, have a longer mid-season break. That would mean next season overruns, which means that then you're going to end up with players who've played pretty much non-stop from the summer of 2019 until the summer, really, of, I guess, 2022.
And then, here we are, give him a three-month break, World Cup after that, in Qatar.
Yeah. Christ, I didn't even think about that.
But
can you imagine how many ACL injuries that would happen that year?
But also, he's like a longer mid-season break. So currently, we have a 1 week mid-season break.
Yeah, let's give him two.
Players would legitimately need about 12 weeks, at least.
I don't understand. Yeah, people would have career-ending
this
injuries.
This is where I think personally, Angelotti made this comment where he said, "Football is the most important thing out of the least important things."
Yes.
And I do agree to that.
Entirely agree with that.
Entirely. Because it's like, this is very severe here. People are dying from this disease. And if these people are worried that, oh my God, I'm not going to be able to see my club kick a ball around for 90 minutes once a week. Jesus Christ, man. Bigger things are happening.
Okay, but there are also like, I do agree, but there are also consequences, right? So like, if a club makes less money, they're more likely to lay off staff. If they lay off staff, they're probably going to lay off staff who are on 0 hours contracts or basically staff who are on like kind of minimum wage, and so as a result it will disproportionately affect the poor. So I do think there are also bigger issues, I know.
But also looking at it from a sporting perspective, or from football specifically, pushing the season back, what's that going to do with transfers? Bear in mind there are allocated transfer windows, and I think we mentioned
they're going to happen during the last like 8 weeks of the season. and I think we even mentioned this sort of up in the office earlier,
like, for a team like Wolves or a team like Sheffield United, who next season could have Champions League football, they could have Europa League football, or they could miss out on Europe
completely.
Important. Their targets and the money that they're going to get in, everything will change on the basis of where they finish. So it's almost like they can't...
They have no certainty whatsoever.
They have no certainty. It's all right for teams like Liverpool, Manchester City, who are going to be in the Champions League, or teams like... Burnley,
Man United, who are going to make the same money regardless.
Yeah, or teams like Burnley, who not going to make Europe, but they're not going to get relegated.
Yeah, they're fine.
Yeah, there's just so much uncertainty from like every single avenue that football gives people. There's just so much. You just don't know what's going to happen.
What happened then when, like, obviously I know swine flu was different, but like when these other viruses were in effect, what happened then with football?
They weren't as contagious, like, yeah. or at least not all of them were. So for instance, like, we didn't see something like we've seen with Italy here,
yeah,
where you're seeing like essentially the total cessation of public life. Like, so you didn't have something as severe as that. Obviously swine flu was much, much more deadly,
yeah,
than coronavirus, but there are certain things about coronavirus that make it hard to track. So for instance, the fact you can be symptomless for so long,
okay,
that's a real problem with coronavirus.
Up to like 3 or 4 weeks. I know the official like incubation period
like
is 2 weeks.
5 days to 2 weeks.
But you could have it, I could have caught it 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And nobody would know and I won't even know.
Well, like the Arsenal players. So the Arsenal players met the owner of Olympiacos 2 weeks ago.
Who's also the owner of Forest, so spends a lot of his time in Nottingham.
And so they are in quarantine now, but they're only in quarantine till Friday, because then it will have been two weeks.
Okay.
But yeah, you have had people say in some cases it could be longer, like 3 or 4 weeks. So we don't actually know. And I mean, to be honest, if you get past 2 weeks and you're showing absolutely no symptoms, you're probably not going to get it, but you might still be a symptomless carrier.
Yeah.
These are such dangerous things. Whereas, you know, in a lot of other diseases, you're only contagious once you start to show symptoms. And as a result, that means once you've got symptoms, we can isolate you and you don't spread it quite as much. Whereas with stuff like this, I mean, also, I think there's an element of it, particularly with the British government, where because it hasn't yet been particularly, it's not been particularly deadly.
Yeah.
It's not killing children, thankfully. Like, children seem to be...
Yeah, and it won't...
There hasn't been a single child death in China.
Under 10
there was a chart we saw earlier where it sort of shows the percentage chance of people passing away if they catch it, and it's like, I don't know, over 80 is like 15%, and then it slowly sort of arcs downwards, and then it's like 30 to 40 0.2, 20 to 30 0.2, 10 to 20 0.2, and then just nothing for under 10s, because under 10s are not immune, but they're kids and they get sick all the time,
and
it's just another thing for them.
And these things, as bad as it sounds, allow governments to ignore things.
Yeah, yeah.
Like if you have something like bird flu was super deadly. Like 60% of people were dying of bird flu.
Oh wow.
It's more deadly than Ebola. Like, but because so many people were dying, governments immediately were like, holy shit, we've got to shut things down and like really, really isolate people. With this, you know, you see Boris Johnson talking on TV about like, oh, well, you know, one of the theories of what you could do is just allow it to like, you know, move through the population naturally, you know, and who gets sick. And you're like, well, that isn't really a theory.
Yeah.
That's just what's going to happen if you don't do anything.
There was something you brought up yesterday, which I then saw a thread on Twitter about, which I thought was actually quite an interesting point, is it's almost fortunate it began in China.
Yes.
The fact that if it began in the UK, where we're a lot more sort of laissez-faire about life and government and things like that, with China, because they're such an autocratic, what the government says you do kind of state, they could just shut everything down.
Yeah, and almost, throw up hospitals in 10 days.
Yeah.
Just build temporary hospitals in 10 days. Can you imagine us trying to do that here?
They could literally just cut off life for, like, Wuhan was like, completely cut off almost as soon as they found out about it, just completely.
And it's been
isolated.
Really successful. Like the fact that now they announced 30 new cases or something.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So like, it's nothing.
And in Wuhan, people are going back to work today as well.
I think it's really weird that like this is going to be something, like this is the first thing in my lifetime which I've lived through where in say 30 years we'll look back and be like, do you remember this when the coronavirus,
I mean, it's,
well, touch wood, we do,
it'll probably be,
it's mental. I've never known anything,
2 year process,
I've never known anything, I can't think of anything in my life where something has happened which has caused an entire country to just go, nope, we're shutting down, in the case of Italy.
Yeah.
Well, like,
Ebola was really, really deadly.
Sure, but it
like,
didn't,
European
there was no,
didn't get
it
affected,
didn't stop so. Travel.
True.
It didn't stop things happening.
Yeah.
Whereas Italy is sort of right, no one in, no one out.
Yes,
unless it's absolutely necessary.
This is like, I'm not saying it is at all, but this must be, have similarities to like kind of when like a war started, when the World War started.
What, where just everything,
where everyone was kind of in
genuinely
huge panic.
I think people
traveling was like a no-go kind of thing. And like I'm saying as well, it's not the same at all, because the war and the disease is very different. But like the similarities there of like the world, even the worldwide panic of like bog roll.
Yeah,
like stuff like that, where it's like,
if you're quarantining for 2 weeks, you're not going to need 8 times 24.
How many times do you go to the toilet?
You're not going to need 200 rolls of toilet paper if you're a family of five for 2 weeks, are you?
I think people haven't quite grasped the ways it's going to affect their daily life. You know, I do understand a bit of panic from some people, but then the other people who are like, oh, those people are idiots. It's like, yeah, they are. But some of the people calling them idiots, I think, have just not understood the gravity of the situation. Because you do get people like this person who's just like, just wait a few weeks and we'll get the all clear.
Yeah.
I think this will be, at the very least, like economically, but in terms of football and in terms of daily life, I think there's going to be like an 18-month process probably of getting past this. Because companies are going under, like will go under because they didn't get enough profit. Like in Chinatown could disappear from London because businesses in Chinatown, it's a pretty dry part of the year anyway, but businesses in Chinatown have said that like they've seen 50% drops in business. Or, you know, restaurants which are otherwise busy will have one table busy at lunchtime. People are cancelling reservations without calling.
Oh yeah, I read that.
Yeah, and no one's turning up. And this was a part of London that was already really affected by rent increases.
Yeah.
So now you've got people who are paying rent, having staff on hand, buying food,
preparing food as well. Yeah. Restaurants were saying people had ordered food to be made for when they get there, them making the food and then just not arriving, just not turning up.
That's wild. And things like duck as well, you know, which need to be cooked in advance. So anyway, like this is things. So now you've got these companies which are going to close down if this continues for just another 6 weeks. Then you've got their suppliers who are going to close down because nobody's going to be buying their supplies anymore. And suddenly you have a whole chain of businesses failing and people being unemployed. So you have like unemployment going up across Europe. Like it's really, really worrying. And I don't know. I mean, like it does seem ridiculous to talk about football in light of that. But I don't know about you guys, but it seems to me very clear that Euro 2020 will almost certainly not happen.
Yeah. I will be surprised if it does.
Well, the Olympic Committee have said the Olympics are going ahead in Japan.
I've heard mixed messages about that.
UEFA seem to be very confident.
The only thing I can say about that is the big difference, like we were saying it earlier, the idea that like the Euros are going to be played around so many different countries was great. However, the fact it's happened this year with the coronavirus is like the worst thing that could have happened.
Yeah, 12 nations, including Italy.
If it was, say, like just in the UK or just in one place, you'd be like, okay, the precautions would be better. However, when people then have to travel all the time to go from stadium to stadium or to watch these games, it makes it so much tougher to control these control the environments.
And I think you'd rather it didn't happen than happen behind closed doors, because while leagues, you know, you might need to find a way to wrap them up somehow, like who cares that much about the Euros? Like, I mean, look, everyone wants to see the Euros, blah blah blah, but if they're going to play it behind closed doors and it's going to be a risk to people's health, just don't play it. It's not that important.
The one thing I will say about like why I kind of partially understand people's opinions on like the football needs to go ahead is that like in this kind of mass panic, having something like football,
having that normality,
the normality where they watch their team every week, I do agree, for them may help people. Just that it is the normality of, okay, I'm sitting down now, I'm going to watch my team play football in front of 40,000 people.
Sure.
That is the normality, and they can kind of switch off from the whole craziness of what the coronavirus is bringing to their everyday lives. But that being said, is if football then is making people is worsening the situation, then that has to change. It needs to.
There's no reason you could say that football wouldn't worsen the situation purely because of the nature of large crowds in the same place at the same time for 2.5-3 hours a day.
There's just so many knock-on effects, man. There are so many knock-on effects.
It's going to be something which, I mean, it is, as you said, it's going to last for a good year or so. But my wonder is when will it start having less media attention? Or is it going to be something like Brexit, which had the media attention for 2-3 years?
I think it will have less media attention once it feels like new cases are on the decline across Europe.
Because I think once that happens, then football's going to be fine.
Sure.
I think we're probably
a couple of months away from that, minimum. Mm. And I suspect that we're actually several months away from it. Because it's... I can't quite understand the idea that it's going to get better in the UK or France or Germany anytime soon. It might get better in Italy because it's pretty bad right now, and they're taking quite extreme measures.
Yeah.
But the UK, I'd be surprised if like it doesn't end up with a huge number of cases, especially seeing as currently we're taking absolutely no measures whatsoever. Like schools are still open.
Yeah, yeah.
Universities are still open. Museums are still open. Like sporting events are still going ahead with crowds.
Everyone's still travelling into London to work for 9 hours a day, then travelling back.
Yeah, and also, and that's the other factor, isn't it? Which is that like people kind of are going to be shamed. Like if they, if people don't want to do that, they're gonna then people are going to worry about losing their jobs, and rightly so, because you know we all see it, like the way that companies react to people who want to work from home, like even when they're entitled to. Let alone the way that like companies react to people who are like, well, it's a danger to my health to come into town. Like if you said that, I cannot imagine how most companies would react. And it means that again, it will disproportionately affect poor people, because poor people will not be able to just like sack off their job for a couple of weeks and potentially lose it.
That's a bittersweet ending. Is that the wording I needed?
No.
Bittersweet.
It's just demoralising, man. Yeah. Like I don't really know. I don't think anyone knows what's going to happen.
Yeah,
but
can't.
I think we can be reasonably sure it's going to get worse before it gets better.
And just stop football.
just
stop it.
I'm fine with them playing all the matches behind closed doors. I really don't care. Like, because you know that's fine with me. Then you can watch it or not watch it. And I also worry that like if you stop playing the matches, clubs are going to have to give money back to sponsors, you know, who've said, well, look, we paid you, understanding you're going to play 60 games on TV this year, blah, blah, blah. And at that point, yeah, again, I think they'll end up laying people off at the bottom of the food chain. So from that point of view, I think you should just carry on playing it, but I also don't care.
The mass population.
It's the last, least important thing.
Yeah.
And on that topic, should we go on to some football?
let's.
Should we talk about the Champions League from last night? Oh, my God. I mean, this will put a smile on your face. Spurs are out.
Hey!
Love to see it. Lost 3-0 away at Leipzig. Lost 4-0 on aggregate. Marcel Sabitzer scored twice. Emil Forsberg netted the third. Demoralising night. They had 6 shots, Tottenham, to Leipzig's 13.
God.
Mourinho's joint heaviest Champions League defeat, equaling the 4-1 loss he suffered with Real Madrid against Borussia Dortmund in April 2013 in the semi-final. You know when Lewandowski scored 4. That was very funny. In fact, he suffered 3 consecutive Champions League defeats for the first time, the coach.
Wow.
Unbelievable.
I mean, he is managing the worst club he has managed whilst managing in the Champions League.
That is true.
Yeah.
That's true.
But he's not helping himself either.
No, he's really not.
Like, of course, Spurs have injuries. We know that. Bergwijn's now injured. Heung-min Son is now injured.
Kane's not
out. Sissoko's still out. Sure, but other clubs have injuries. I mean, Manchester United, their best attacker is out. Chelsea, there's about 6-7 different players that are out. And I know, obviously, different scenarios. Like United are able to fill in different people. Chelsea have a really good youth side. But I personally don't agree with the way, say, Jose has dealt with the situation. Ndombele was bad against Burnley. He was really bad against Burnley. But the way he dealt with that in the media, don't think was too good. And we've said it for a few years now, but Jose built a career off being the player manager, the manager that players loved. He would fight for them. He would never throw them under the bus. But then second year of Manchester United and since then.
Did he do it at all at Chelsea? Second time at Chelsea?
Second time at Chelsea he did. Hazard, he threw him under quite a few times.
He said that there were like traitors in the squad, right?
Yeah, but Hazard.
Wasn't Courtois also rumoured to be one?
I don't want to say you can understand with Hazard, but with Hazard being the star of Chelsea, it's almost like, well, our best player needs to play better. But when you look
at it, he did it at Real Madrid. Real.
But that's because I think at Real Madrid, like Real Madrid was really when like he would start to go to war with players.
Yeah.
Like there were players who hated him at Real Madrid. So like he had his issues with like with Sergio Ramos, for example, and Casillas. Like whereas before that he'd been loved everywhere he'd gone. Mm. Like after this, when he came back to Chelsea, I think he changed a lot.
Yeah.
And he stopped being the guy who like, yeah, you're his soldier, you'll run through a wall for him. He started being someone who would just beef with players. And when something went wrong in a game, he'd say, it's this player's fault.
Yeah.
As opposed to what he'd done before, where he would genuinely... Like, the whole specialist in failure thing was pretty much a thing that he concocted to take attention away from, like, difficult times at Chelsea. He used to, like, go out and, like... He would get himself fined by the FA for having a go at a referee after a game to avoid blaming his players.
Yeah.
Whereas now, he would just come out after a game and say, so-and-so was rubbish, he's really letting us down at the moment. But then he'll also say, oh, well, it's a problem that we don't have like players in the squad, you know, like because of injury. And you're like, well, which is it? Like, yeah. Which is it? Do you not have the players? Are the players not playing well? Are you doing anything wrong? But obviously not.
It's even like, I think like just tactically, he's getting it wrong. And just like his Spurs right now is just a pay packet for him. You can almost guarantee that. There's no affiliation to Spurs. Why would he care? Like, there's no... He personally does not...
I think he cares about his reputation, though, right?
Sure.
I don't think he's going to, like, phone it in.
But it's even like... Think about the Jose Mourinho, even a few years back, right? Spurs won a penalty shootout against Norwich City in the FA Cup. And his whole team are in arms, locked in together, watching the penalty shootout. Meanwhile, he's sitting there on the bench just watching it on the TV. Spurs get knocked out. He literally gets up, doesn't go to console any of his players, just walks straight down the tunnel. That's not the Jose Mourinho I remember.
Yeah.
Personally, if his team had been knocked out, he'd be straight over there. Because Troy Parrott missed the penalty, and he would have been over to him, being like, "Don't worry," or at least have his arm around his shoulder, bringing him back into the
people
dugout.
Do genuinely forget what Mourinho was like in the early days when like players loved him.
He was a really, really good manager.
Yeah, and a great man manager. Like people would he would have gone over. He would have he'd have maybe given the referee a bollocking, but he would 100% have consoled all his players and been like, created the atmosphere of it's us. He used to create this idea of it's us against them.
Yeah.
And now with Mourinho, it's me against everyone.
Yeah.
Like, and he's got worse and worse and worse in this regard. He got really bad at United. And now and when he came back to Spurs, everyone was like, he's had a year out. Maybe he's cheered up.
Yeah. And he seemed to have cheered up.
He did. He did. And his first couple of results were not too bad.
And no one's denying that he has been like shafted by injuries. He absolutely has. I'm not saying even that Spurs should be doing better, though I also do think that he has made bad decisions. What I don't like is him blaming people for things they can't help. So Son can't help being injured. Kane can't help being injured. But Ndombele is being played despite clearly not being 100%. And yet I'm still seeing people who want to defend Mourinho say, well, you know, Ndombele didn't even complete a sprint the other day against Burnley. And you're like, have you seen Ndombele recently?
Yeah, he can't
run. Do you think he's just either lost interest in football or suddenly lost his ability? That doesn't make any sense.
When you look at the stats, I saw him on Sky Sports, is that he'd completed zero sprints, at least on the field, but he'd also had the most touches in the Spurs team in the first half.
But sprints are one of those things where you're like, if he genuinely can't run, that is different from a day where like all his dribbles are bad or all his shots are bad. You know, if you actually can't run, that is a sign that you are not fit for the game. And it reminds me a bit of when Naby Keita... in his first season at Liverpool was really in and out of the side. And then I remember a couple of games where he was playing, people were like, he doesn't look like he's trying. And I was like, he looks like he's got a back injury.
Yeah.
He was running like really gingerly. And the same thing goes with Ndombele.
And then he
had
6 weeks off and was really good.
Yeah, and you're just like, this is what's happening. Like, but in the past, Mourinho would have been like, I don't know why he doesn't say, in a way, I think they'd be better off if they were like 10th Spurs. Because then he could say, you know what, Ndombele, go and get surgery or whatever you need.
Season's gone.
Yeah. Whereas because of where they are, they're still a point ahead of Arsenal. They're still within touching distance of United.
4 points.
Champions League ain't too far.
I think he has this attitude of like, we can still do it and therefore I have to be on their asses. Otherwise people will blame me for losing Champions
League.
But then
it's like, even tactically, right? Jose Mourinho is known for his great defensive setup. And at Spurs, they've conceded more goals with him being there.
Yeah,
and it's not even like you can say, okay, that it's because they're attacking better. They're not. They're not doing anything better. And maybe personally, I didn't necessarily agree.
They did defend better initially, but now they've got. But their defense isn't actually an area that is hit by injuries, right?
Yeah,
the defense is actually like he loaned out Danny Rose in January. He needn't have done that. Like the defense has been has actually been not affected by these injuries in remotely the same way as the attack. And yet the defence is the thing that recently has gone way down in quality. Way down. And you're absolutely right. Since Mourinho's first game in charge, only Aston Villa have conceded more goals in all competitions than Spurs among Premier League clubs.
And Aston Villa have a worse defence.
And they are.
Aston Villa's defence is atrocious. Atrocious. I think they've conceded 56 in the Prem. They've conceded 42 since Mourinho came in. Spurs have conceded 38. It's actually quite close.
Yeah, Aston Villa have been so bad that there's talks this morning that Dean Smith might get sacked.
Yeah. And now Spurs... Though Spurs
I also saw a Villa fan say that they should get Pochettino in.
I mean, why not? Probably keep him up. But this is the thing as well. This isn't a guy who's a caretaker till the end of the season.
Yeah,
you know, they're paying him...
2023?
Is it that much? I thought it was like 50. Jesus.
I think 20... No, as in, like, I think the contract is a 4-year contract until 2023.
Yeah, but there'll be break clauses in it. Like, I think I do trust Levy in that regard. There'll be break clauses. But I just think, I think people will come back, and I don't think Bergvine will be out for the season, except, well, the season will get suspended.
Yeah, so. Harry Kane will play before the end.
Like, but even still, and I think they'll be okay next year. But does Mourinho push them up? I think that all the bounce they got earlier in the year was because the squad was better than 14th
any
place,
manager
which is where
that.
It was.
Any manager would have...
I think that's often
would
the
have,
case.
Yeah, it is. And any manager that came in, even if it was Eddie Howe, would have probably got some results.
Like, yeah, because they were miserable and it wasn't working. Yeah. And like, often
and
I
you
think,
can
like,
even tell, those games that they did win, they weren't that much better. They were like winning. True. They were winning like 3-2.
Yeah.
Still conceding two goals and just about getting a chance. Like, was it Norwich?
When they first
won 2-1. They luckily won 2-1.
West Ham as well.
Yeah, I say when he first came in, his first game was against us. Was against West Ham. Yeah, they were 3-0 up, absolutely cruising.
And everyone was like, oh my God, the match.
And then last in injury time, it was like, hold on a second, West Ham could get a point here.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. But then, I mean, we should probably focus on the game yesterday. And RB Leipzig, for all Spurs' faults, RB Leipzig were pretty good, unsurprisingly.
They're still quite vulnerable defensively. There were lots of moments, especially in the second half, where I was like, maybe they'd have played differently if they hadn't been like 3-0 up on aggregate at that point. Yeah. But in the early stages of the second half, I was like, Spurs have got so many breakaways that they're just not turning into shots. And I do think if you had a Son there, particularly, less so a Kane, but particularly a Son, those would turn into high quality chances. And so I was a little bit like, Leipzig are going to need to lock this down.
They do need to. I think that's when Nagelsmann needs to maybe kind of be a bit more smarter with his game management. Right. Realise they are 3-0 up, 2-0 up, and then maybe think, okay, instead of attacking all... Because I think like his one is, let's just outscore our opponents.
Yeah.
And he's like, maybe when you are winning that by that much, you could actually think, let's defend a bit more now. Because there's one where the keeper parries it right, like straight in front of a Spurs player, and luckily one of the RB players get there. It's just things like that where it's like, okay, take your time now. Actually think we're 3-0 up. We're through now. Let's just not concede and make it harder than it's supposed
to be.
That
said, Leipzig should probably also have had a penalty. Like, I know you disagree about this, but the Tanganga foul.
I see both sides.
I think it's a dirty challenge, man. And I think that anywhere else on the pitch, not only is it a free kick, it's at least a yellow card. Because his shoulder is... He's just hit him. He's literally hit him after the ball's gone much harder than he needs to. You say it's shoulder to shoulder, but like, there's actually no need for him to go shoulder to shoulder there, and his shoulder goes into his chest.
Yeah, I feel like the slow-mo doesn't help it. But I can see both sides that yes, that could be a penalty. If the ball's still there, it's definitely a penalty. That's the thing. It's the fact that the ball's not there, and the other option is like, what else? He's running so fast to try and get back that the other option is to essentially just let the RB likes it.
But that happens sometimes. If you're through on goal and I'm running as fast as I can to get back and I slip and fall and my foot takes you out, you're getting a penalty.
Yeah, true. I think the fact the ball isn't in play then, nothing's happened, is why it's not a penalty.
Yeah.
The ball's there, it's definitely a penalty.
But then the problem I have is that I think it should be a yellow card. I don't care about the penalty so much, but I was like, it's a dirty foul. It should be a yellow card. But if it's a yellow card, you're saying there's a foul. If there's been a foul, it kind of has to be a penalty.
Exactly. The thing is, Tanganga's...
If you just punch someone in the box while your keeper's holding the ball,
it's a penalty.
They're getting a penalty even though the attacking side's not in possession.
Tanganga, you can see his frustration with the game as well. I think that's his like a bit of inexperience coming in there.
I mean, this would have been...
Yeah, though Eric Lamella could also have been red carded.
I mean, this would have been the biggest game of Tanganga's career.
Yeah.
Undoubtedly, considering he made his debut
even that was City as well when they got the win, was pretty good. But yeah, no, I do agree, like for him as well, like to see his team 3-0 down and not really much he can do about it, his head's kind of gone.
Should we move on to the other Champions League game, which is much more entertaining?
Oh, so much
Atalanta
more.
March on after an
8-4.
Yeah, I wrote 8-3. Aggregate win over Valencia. Now, obviously, they had to fly out of quarantined Italy to go to Valencia to face them in an empty stadium. Empty, but for one seat.
Yes.
Because there is one nice seat touch in Valencia Stadium, which is occupied by a statue of a fan who used to come to every game, even after he went blind.
Yeah.
So they were watched by this one.
Was it attendance one?
I don't think they count him as a supporter, but
it's also a really nice touch.
Also, as an aside, nice, before we talk about the game, really like Valencia Stadium. I'd never seen it empty before. But having like the bat logo like on the seats, I saw that. And thought, Valencia need to play in an empty stadium more often.
I had a few mates who went there for the Chelsea game this season. They said it was one of the best, even though they were right at the top, it was one of the best atmospheres.
Are these mates or like players' mates?
Mates. And they were like, because they were at the very top and they were watching down, obviously. And they said the atmosphere is amazing. But then they would just turn around and they just had an amazing view of Valencia right behind them.
That's
like really pretty.
I love stadiums like that. Scene.
Well, I don't think the atmosphere was particularly great on this occasion. The host had a 4-1 first leg deficit to overturn, but lost 4-3 on the night. Now, they were actually leading 3-2 going into the last 20 minutes. But Josip Iličić ended up getting 4 goals in this game to send his side through. He's now got 5 goals in those 2 knockout games.
I think those are all his 5 goals in the Champions League this season.
And I think it means that he's in the round of 16. I'm not sure about the knockout stage overall. It means that he's 1 goal behind Zlatan and 1 goal behind Robin van Persie for goals in that stage.
Well, he was the first ever player to score a hat trick on the away leg of the round of 16.
I would probably go as far to say I think he might be the first player to score 4 goals away from home in a Champions League.
Yeah, I think he might be.
Definitely. He might be. I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I think you're right there.
Absolutely ridiculous.
Thing is, as well,
they're so fine.
He's not a pretty footballer, if that makes sense.
Yeah, he's really gangly.
Yeah, he's really.
You said he was. Someone described him as Messi in Ronaldo's body.
Yeah, I can't remember who said that.
Well, George said he reminds him of the Pepperami man. Pepperami with the stick.
Yeah.
He does.
Yeah,
but his left foot is mad. It is so. This is going to sound really so like I don't know anything, but
go for it.
It is very cultured, if that makes sense. The way
can I just say on that point, nobody has a cultured right foot. It's always
cultured. It's always
left foot. Everyone
expects. But it's even like the second his third goal. He passes the ball to Zapata, thinking Zapata's going to go down the wing and cross it in. I don't know if Zapata mucks up the pass.
It gets cut back to him,
and it's almost like he looks up and goes, "Do I have to do all of this?" And then just dribble past the two players and puts it in bottom right-hand corner.
They looked so tired at that point.
They did.
Like, Iličić was running up the field and it was like a 3-on-3 break or something. And he was just totally free. But he was still running really slowly. Then when the ball comes back to him, he's got Dani Parejo and Coquelin in front of him. And he doesn't even beat them. He just walks.
Takes it to the left.
He walks to his left and hammers it in the bottom corner.
I think Cillessen could have done better.
Maybe,
personally.
But it's
basically
a free shot from the edge of the area. Like, it's unreal how free it is. And then the last goal, the ball comes to him in the box. He's totally open. Rather than just, like, tap it in like or slide it in,
it's a great finish.
He curls it into the top corner from about 10 yards out.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Though it should be said that Valencia didn't help themselves. Third minute.
No, they were pretty good attacking-wise.
Third minute, they gave away a penalty.
Yeah, because Iličić won both the penalties as well.
Yeah. And then the 43rd minute, they gave away a penalty for a handball. And it's like, come on, guys. So, try and help yourself. Yeah,
so fantasy football rules. In a game where they won, where they scored 4 goals, Iličić got 4 goals and two assists.
Two assists. He assisted himself twice. Plus man of the match.
Although he's turning 33 very soon.
Yeah, he's like 32, 33. Also with Valencia, though, they do have so many injuries. I mean, I'm not trying to say that they wouldn't have lost this game.
Still put up a better fight against Atalanta than Spurs did against
They weren't playing their first choice back four.
Sure.
Their entire back four was their backup back four.
Everyone is injured.
Coquelin was playing at centre back.
It's not great.
Wow.
It's not great.
Yeah.
But and like they're funny.
Like Maxi Gomez also injured their best attacker, like just not there.
Atalanta win the Champions League, but no one can watch them do it. That's what's going to happen.
Tragic.
Also,
where do you think they will go? Leipzig as well. Leipzig.
I think now maybe Leipzig less so, but I think with Atalanta especially, people are going to be more aware of them now.
Sure.
Whereas before it was like if they were in your group, if you drew them, it was like they were like the underdogs.
And to be fair, they lost. Didn't they lose their first few games?
They did.
They were looking. Sure, but they were.
They've been a bit lucky.
I think they must. They must be one of the first teams, if not the first team, to have lost the first 3 games of a group and then gone through.
It to the thing. I think we did it, or did we only lose the first two?
I couldn't tell.
I think Arsenal did it. Possibly,
but
we definitely lost the first two. We lost to Dinamo Zagreb and Olympiakos, I think. And we topped the
group. It's always Olympiakos.
I think. It was nuts. It might have been the PSG year, actually. We're playing at Emery's PSG. It was a piece of piss. Yeah, I don't know, man. Like, I think the thing is about Atalanta is they had the easiest draw of this round.
Yeah, Valencia.
And they went through
But then you could also have argued that Valencia also had the easiest draw of this round.
I think Atalanta are better than people think, man.
I'm not trying to say they're group though.
Or they were in City's group, weren't they?
Oh no, so they came second. So Valencia were playing like
Valencia won Chelsea's
group. I know teams that came second in their group.
Real Madrid came second in their group.
Christ.
I mean the point I was trying to make is that Atalanta versus Valencia is probably the draw both sides would have wanted.
Yeah, I suppose that's probably fair enough.
Yeah.
The fact that Atalanta went on to completely
You could have got Lyon.
But Lyon are beating Juventus at the moment.
Yeah, but Lyon came second in their group, right?
Yes, Juventus topped.
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, Valencia could have got Lyon. Valencia could have got Lyon.
But I still think coming into it, they would have been like...
We're all trying to remember the rules for draws in the Champions League.
Who was in Lyon's group? That's what I was trying to work out. Christ. Who won Lyon's group?
I don't remember, bro.
God knows. Don't think it was too great.
I literally do not remember.
But yeah, no, the point I was making, I think City or Barca or whoever pull Atalanta next, I'm pretty sure they'll be like, okay, we've got to keep an eye on this this Gomez and Ilicic guy.
And Atalanta did concede four goals over two legs against
Lyon were in Leipzig group.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Okay. So they could have got Lyon. I would rather have got Lyon than Atalanta if I were Valencia. But I know what you're saying. Like Atalanta are like technically a smaller club.
Mm.
But Christ, I don't know, man. Like it's, and they could have got Spurs. They could have got Spurs as well.
Atalanta would probably feel like they could take on absolutely anyone.
For
them now, it's like if they go out in the next round, it's like not surprised.
Because unless Lyon go through, there's basically no club they can come up against in the next round that would be like humiliating to go out to. Like, I mean, they could get Leipzig and they'd maybe think, you know, like we can play Leipzig at least even. They could get Lyon and think we should win. But against every other club who could feasibly be in the next round, Atalanta are going to look at them and be like, if we go out to this team, like who cares, man?
Could see them drawing City in the next round again.
Yeah.
And going out like 9-4 on aggregate.
Yeah. And I mean, the only tragedy is that Atalanta's fans are not going to get to see all this.
Did you hear the story about them? Because obviously, behind closed doors, Valencia, they'd all already paid for their travel and their tickets and everything.
Yeah.
They got completely reimbursed for travel and for their tickets.
By the club?
I'm not sure who by, but they got all the money they spent, they got back, donated it all to the local hospital because of, everything.
Damn.
Yeah.
Atalanta fans are sick.
They're lovely.
So considering how much they would have been out of pocket for...
Like train
for the game,
travel and everything.
And obviously they had to travel.
Yeah,
they're not even playing in Atalanta. They're not playing anywhere at the moment. But they were playing in Milan for the Champions League. How much out of pocket they had to go to get to Milan
I probably would only donate some of it to the hospital if I'm honest with you.
I know, like
they can't even spend it right now. The hospital, like what are they going to spend it on? They can't import like more nurses. The region's on lockdown.
God,
it's the so gesture.
Cheap
though, isn't it?
Italy at the moment.
It's nice. It's a nice gesture.
It's a good few thousand. I was about to say lira. It would have been a few billion lira, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
It's a good few thousand euros.
Nah, yeah, fair play. Definitely is. Hats off to them.
Tens of thousands.
I feel footballed out. I feel like we spoke so much about football and so much about coronavirus.
I feel like we'll bin anything but football for this week.
Fair dues.
Because, coronavirus was pretty anything but football.
Yeah, we spoke a lot about...
Pretty heavy this week, guys.
Yeah, I mean, everyone at home, make sure you wash your hands. Obviously hand sanitizer isn't available in a lot of shops at the moment, but just use soap.
I found out a way you can get hand sanitizer. Probably
steal
not
it from work.
Can you just Amazon it?
Probably not feasible for individuals, but you can get like free sample hand sanitizers that are like got your company's logo on. So if FD got like promotional hand sanitizer, you could get like 1500 bottles of it.
So this is the time.
If you would like an FD hand sanitizer bottle, please get in touch on Twitter and we'll see what we can do.
150 quid. That's what we'll do it for.
Now, this that has happened basically in the world. They've just gone up in price.
Okay, this has got off piece. Yeah. I think we're going to bring this to an end. Guys, is there anything you want to plug? Just like your personal accounts if you want, you know?
Yeah, go say hello to Mike Atkins on his Twitter. And there's not no, Instagram.
There's no I in Atkins.
Yeah, it's Mike Atkins.
Atkins.
Yeah.
And I don't have Instagram.
I do have Instagram. Patrick BVS. There you go. But I sort of hate Instagram at the moment.
Oh, I like it. So follow me if you want. It's just Zach Jellab. ZACDJELLAB.
And don't forget, you can also see Zach on Chelsea Fan TV.
No, Chelsea's official YouTube channel.
You are the biggest Chelsea fan on Chelsea Fan TV.
I'll take it.
You're the Robbie of Chelsea Fan TV.
I'll definitely take that.
Don't take that. That's all we've got time for this week. Thanks for listening to this quite shambolic episode. And we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
See ya. Don't get the coronavirus.
Wash your hands.
It's extra time.
He shoots and it's a goal.